For September the 19th, 2025, we talk about Borderlands 4, Silk Song, No Case Should Remain Unsolved, and much more. Welcome to Level 558. My name is Kay Ross.
My name is Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Once again, we hoped that we would have Dennis here. We hoped we would have a full quorum. Technical shit is getting in the way. He is troubleshooting and trying to get stuff working on his side. If you can join us, he'll pop in. But we're just kind of writing. Or just get a ride with the three of us if that's what we have to do.
Software has taken off a podcast host. So
right. Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, we would have asked Jala if she wanted to be on. So anyway, it's trying to move on, get started with the actual thing. Who's got something? Who's been doing stuff?
I got one thing.
Okay.
I did something weird this past week where I watched a 10-hour YouTube video on a 3-hour movie that I enjoy, which is Bo is Afraid.
Okay. Is that the same guy who did like the 7-hour Midsummer?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't have their name memorized, so I can't name check it right now. But yeah, going into like the symbolism of the movie and stuff, and a lot of layers that I did not consider, but yeah, interesting interpretations of it, especially with like Greek mythology stuff. Yeah. So yeah, I had already thought it was like movie of the year, but it even elevated my appreciation of it even more. So
nice. At the rate he's going, he's going to have a 20-hour Eddington movie or 20-hour editing video. Yeah. Yeah. I've not watched Bo is Afraid. I'm afraid to because of the mom shit and that.
Yeah, it's probably helpful if you realize that it's a metaphor for something not of an actual mother, but
right.
It's easy to say that, hard to feel that. So
right, yeah. So just like, did you just piece it out like in chunks, or was this like a Lord of the Rings marathon day?
Yeah, I was kind of using this as like background stuff for if I was working or in the mornings and stuff. But. Yeah. Just to give you an example, it's like there's like one scene that's like maybe 10 to 20 minutes just going through individual background characters and like what the symbolism could be or whatever. So it gets pretty in depth. But enjoyable watch. And I think a line from the video that I kind of resonated with me is like, this is one of my favorite movies ever. I cannot recommend it to people because
I love anything that is in that. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, you know, how many times have I said that about a game? Right. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
It is a magical space for any creative work to be in. Mm. Yeah. That's cool. Moxie, how about you?
Not a whole lot. Went and visited the National Museum of Asian Art and the National Museum of African Art.
Okay.
Over the weekend, so that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I mostly, just because I was limited on time, saw the Museum of Asian Art. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it's mostly like one specific person's collection. This person's long since dead, but you know, but because of that, like, it's mostly Asian art, but then there's also like a small section of American art and like a fairly good Egyptian, like collection of Egyptian artifacts. And
is this part of the Smithsonian or private museum? Okay, cool.
The other thing that's interesting about both of them is they're both really cool. You know, really neat architecture, but I don't know if maybe they were just like built and, you know, like long before people had an idea of like how big of a deal the Smithsonian's going to be, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Because both of them, almost the entirety of the collection is technically in like basement levels. Like there's like one fairly small ground floor and then everything else is like levels below ground.
Okay.
And so, I don't know, like I said, it's a really neat building, but I don't know quite why it's built that way.
Seems like a more expensive way to build a building, but
yeah.
I guess there is the DC law, though, where it's like you can't go above a certain height. And it's like 5 or 6 stories or something like that.
It's the Washington Monument, is you can't be higher than that. Although I don't know if that's in absolute terms or if that is literally nothing can encroach above that altitude, above sea level.
So the actual thing is that's like a super common urban legend. the law is actually something like no building can be taller than twice the width of the street it's on. But in effect that means that nothing can be taller than the Washington Monument, because like otherwise you'd have a super huge street,
right?
But yeah, I now that you mention it, I think there was maybe some mention that at least one of these buildings was built in such a way that to be able to see the Smithsonian Castle from like to not block the view of the Smithsonian Castle or something.
Okay.
But I know. Anyways, it was a lot of fun. And there the African Art Museum had like a kids program going on where they're teaching like African dance, which was pretty cool.
Oh. That sounds like a good time.
Yeah.
Enriching. Yeah. I don't have an awful lot. I went and got my shots. Get your shots, everybody. Plan them.
Shots.
Yes. much like that kind of shots. I was out of commission for a while afterwards. Yeah. A little bit of a hangover from it. So yeah. So like I just ended up doing a bunch of laying around and doing like a lot of just like kind of mindless work with this content migration thing going on. Just a lot of. Just open a post, title it, close it, kind of stuff. Things that needed to be done. And it's good that I didn't need to exercise a lot of executive function to do it, I guess.
How far through are you with that?
The only show that I have left to do is Watch Out for Fireballs. Now, that is the complicated one because of our scheme that we have with the premium episodes. Like, some of them are... It can't just be like a straight, like you bring in everything and then you just rename it and you're good. There's going to be like weird duplicates and you have to handle it in a particular way. It's a bit of a bummer, but I don't know. It's like a day of work and then it'll be done. Mm. Yeah. But yeah, it's mostly just been that for me. I'm really looking forward to it being done so I can try to work on and think about other things.
Yeah. Things that do use your executive functions and creativity. Yes. And
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I've been doing. And then playing games in bed. But
so follow up from last week, how was your thing recording? And I can tell you how the thing screening was.
So our Unfilmable About the Thing, it's coming out next week as of the time people are hearing this. It's usually the last Wednesday of the month. It went great. We got to talk about the thing. It's good. It's a very good movie.
Holds up. Yeah.
Yeah. So was that your experience? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I mean, there's no real changes in the experience. Like, it's still a good ride. The only thing that was noticeable was, like, the nighttime scenes were, like, really good. And it's like, oh, that's, like, something that actually blew up, and that looks really good. So, yeah.
Yeah, nice. I love the stop motion.
Oh, yeah. Stop motion and sculpture work in that.
It's strange to me that you don't see more stop motion in horror films just because, like, Even though back then it was the only way to do those things, and that's not true now, it still looks creepy as hell on its own, you know?
Yeah. It's just one of those things where it's like more expensive and like maybe harder to control, but when it's done well, it looks sick.
Also, isn't there like this might be an urban legend or maybe I misread a news story, but like the Wallace and Gromit, like that production company, like has their hands on all of the extant clay that can do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, apparently it's like super limited, like kind of like how like the sand that can make high quality glass is a really,
like hot commodity.
Yeah. I don't know how like rare it is in absolute terms, but like it is it's a thing that, you know, it's valuable to have.
Right.
But like, I think that like that studio has their hands on all of the clay that can have that. And it's a lot, but it's still finite. until they can find an alternative. Yeah. I don't know. It's just weird. Sad. Existential. I don't know.
I feel that way about like helium, right? Like there's like,
yeah, I was about to say that.
Yeah. One day it's just gone.
I was about to say, I used to work in like, with a helium cooled system, and they're like, yeah, this stuff, like, we're putting it in balloons and then it floats away and then it's gone and then we don't have medical devices.
Bye. Yeah. Say goodbye to MRIs, bud. We're going to try not to think about that. it is a bummer though. Why'd you have to bring it up, Ben?
I'm Why'd sorry. You do it? I thought I was matching the vibe, but.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
let's turn the ship around.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's talk about games. To do that, we have to do the regular kind of show, the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing over the last period of time or so. Ben has raised his finger, indicating that he has something to say.
I got a great like vibe segue, if I can go first, to talk about my game.
Okay.
I only have one game this week. It's a more of like an indie game, but it's called No Case Should Remain Unsolved. And it's a single developer. I think they're Korean, perhaps. But I think it originally started as like a game jam game, but definitely added a layer of polish on it. But it's about a girl being kidnapped. So I thought that would be a good vibe match for a downer. So,
okay.
Just nice emotional segue.
Yeah. The girl who went missing is the helium.
Yeah, that's right. but anyway, this is like a game that's like in the same genre of like the Root Trees Are Dead sort of thing, or like any sort of procedural where it's like you're talking to a bunch of people, you're trying to find clues, put pieces together. The premise of this one is you're playing a police detective, or rather you're playing a cop who's talking to a police detective, and you're trying to figure out details of a case that they had like 10 or 20 years ago about a missing child's case. And so the premise is this was the only case that was unsolved for the detective. And so they're trying to get pieces of information about it back together to try and solve it. The problem is that the police detective who originally was on the case, all of their memories are like fuzzy and out of order. They're kind of like kind of have like some form of like dementia where nothing's like coherent. And so the idea of how that's conveyed visually is you get all these texts and like dialogue from around the case, but you have no idea who you're talking to and you have no idea what time or when this was. And so, yeah.
So you start having to cross-reference and say like, okay, well, they would have been in this place at the same time based on them talking about this. He only could have known this at this particular time.
Yeah.
You do the Obra-Dinn chart.
It's right? A bit like that. Yeah. The way that it's laid out in this game is like every column corresponds to a person that the detective was talking to for the case. And so when you get a new dialogue option, it'll either have like a selector for the person. And if you change that, the dialogue will move to whatever column that you've found so far. Once you solve certain clues, then you're given like a definitive, this person said that, and it'll tell you the timestamps of they said it on this date. And then the other thing that you can do is like when you have multiple dialogues in the same column, you can order them around. So you can move them up in the time or down in time. And the idea is when you have pieces that are adjacent to one another, they'll combine. So small pieces will start forming into like a larger stream of text. And eventually, so
that confirms like, okay, yeah, you got this right. Don't worry about it. Here's a big chunk. Work stuff around it now.
Yeah. And so by the end of the game, you just have a single stream down the entire dialogue from like beginning to end with timestamps and stuff. And so part of how like clues are uncovered is every like text conversation you have, it'll like have hashtags for certain words or like themes of what's going on. So it could be words like time or like caretaker or hospital or playground, stuff like that. And so whenever you find like new dialogue options, they'll have tags on them. And you have to find one of those keywords in existing text you have to open up that dialogue option. That sounds a little bit convoluted, but all that's to say is
like a keyword system. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like one question that that asks another person leads to like three other pieces of text, but you kind of have a resource system with how you can open those up and the order in which you choose to open them up. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, once you get things locked in order, you get an incrementing resource where every time you get five of those, you get a key, and a key will open up more like pivotal dialogue options with suspects and are more like bigger, like narrative reveals in the story. I don't know if all this sounds complicated or not, but this is like maybe a 2 or 3 hour game. So it's not exactly like a long thing. But yeah, once you kind of get your feet under you and you kind of understand how the game works, it's a good ride as far as like figuring out what the narrative is and who the people are. It does a good job of like making it somewhat non-obvious, like what the relationships between the characters are. There's like a good amount of subterfuge, so it doesn't make it clear, and it's kind of hard to piece things together until you get towards the very end. It's an enjoyable experience. If you're into the games like the Root Tree type stuff, this is a good bite-sized version of that.
That is a really good length for one of these. Like, that sounds like it's roughly like the length of like an act in a Golden Idol game almost.
Yeah. It definitely doesn't overstay its welcome or anything like that. And it's a good bite-sized game. There's like a good level of polish over all the mechanics that are there, but it's not overly complicated. It just does what it needs to do. So I was really satisfied with it. But
is there like a cyberpunk angle to this? Because I'm seeing some like weird little like head cyber deck jellyfish wires kind of thing coming off of it.
There. So what made this game like a little cinematic is it opens up with like a cutscene and like some dialogue from the narrator. So there's some, but there's no like science fiction elements at all. It's like something that takes place, not exactly modern day. I think it takes place in like 2012, like that time period. Yeah. But certain pieces of dialogue might jump around in time a little bit. It's very grounded at least, but I think it is. It's all Asian themed though. It's all like, I believe it takes place in Korea, but I don't think it mentions like what city it is or anything. But,
yeah. Based on the names, I believe it's Korean.
Yeah.
So I love the art style too. Like that. Reminds me of like Snatcher or something like that. The Sega CD or Sega Saturn version of that.
Yeah. Basically where you see art in the game is anytime you're reading a dialogue option for the first time, or like a dialogue text between the detective and a person, it optionally will show a picture to the side of it to kind of give you a visual peace of mind. So it's like, you know, somebody was playing on the playground, it might show a picture of the playground. And then where that can lead in. So I mentioned that like you can get these like key resources to unlock pieces of dialogue. The other thing is there's kind of like narrative gates to it, where it's like, it'll be like a question, like on what date did this happen? Or like, how do you know that this person's like, okay, or not the person? And what it'll do when you click on it is it'll bring up all the text, like in your streams of dialogue. And you have to go and click on the text that will like pieces together that information.
Right.
And that's like another way to like gate the system, but that's another way to kind of like interact with the story. Forget why that brought that up, but
I mentioned the art and you talked about when it shows up and when it doesn't.
The reason why I brought that up is because sometimes the answer might be in a picture of something that's happened. So you can go and select something there.
Okay.
This
developer seems to be, you know, like their thing is to do stuff like this. Like they've got like a forensic, like look into a cell phone thing. They've got one called Legal Dungeon. Which I thought they shut that place down.
I haven't explored their other games yet, so yeah, I should mm-hmm. go back and check that out, I guess, based off of this game. But yeah, Somi, I believe, is the name of the developer. S-O-M-I.
Yeah. Looks cool. I don't know. I still haven't played Retreats. I think it's in that pile of things that like I kind of think maybe we're gonna do it for WoW at some point. Although I know Gary doesn't like those games as much as I do.
You'll have to have a guest commentator on for that one then.
Yeah, probably for the mystery coded stuff. Yeah,
it's definitely those types of games definitely scratch a very particular itch, and so it's like you either have it or you don't. I feel like, but yeah.
I'm still chasing that Ober Den High. Yeah. What else did you have?
That's all I got.
Okay. Moxie, do you have anything that is not Silk Song?
I just a little bit, actually.
Okay.
So I've been playing the most recent kind of, I don't know what, I guess, patch season, whatever, of Division 2.
Okay.
So I might have mentioned last time, kind of the big thing this time around is as you fight enemies, complete objectives, that sort of thing, for each faction, you build up a retaliation meter.
Okay.
And when it reaches the maximum, they will invade one of the zones, and you have to basically do a time limited kind of challenge mode where you have to, in a very quick amount of time, retake all of the control points in that section of the map. And then also you will periodically get attacked by like kill squads, quote unquote, which are basically kind of like groups of bosses. So it's a lot of fun, kind of a cool change of pace. I think my favorite part of it is that they've intentionally made it, a lot of the actual gameplay is kind of horde mode gameplay. So like once you take a point, you then have to defend against several hordes of enemies.
Okay.
And they've purposely made it so that the waves of enemies you can get are a lot more varied than what you get in the base game. So like I've gotten attacked by like entire squads of snipers or you know, squads of tanks. One of the most interesting actually was like an entire thing of suicide bombers.
Oh.
Which was interesting because it, you know, that then switches the game to being you know, they're very easy to take down, but it's very bad if any of them get, you know, get close to you. So it kind of becomes less about, you know, accuracy and damage and more about like just keeping on top of things.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a lot of fun. You know, one of those things, as you know, every objective you complete, that sort of thing, gives you more time. So you're kind of trying to build up momentum. And then, the big reward they've added is you can get blueprints to be able to craft exotic gear, which is that's kind of the highest rarity gear where it, they each have some mechanic to them that changes the way the game is played. So that's been pretty cool. I just unlocked the ability to get the seasonal modifiers. So these are basically different mechanics that they release each season. This season, they're all themed around the various enemy factions. So you basically get one of the abilities the enemies have. I think the strangest and probably my favorite is
suicide bomber.
No, that one is not. Although that would be very interesting change to gameplay. No, so one of the factions is I guess they're kind of comparable to like the bandits in like a Fallout. Just kind of people have decided that the apocalypse, you know, isn't worth, you know, trying to rebuild, and just, you know, hedonism and, you know, chaos.
Mad Max shit. Yeah,
exactly. And so their rusher class, the enemies whose AI is basically charge you and try to engage at close range, before they rush you, will basically like pull out some drugs and use them and get hyped up. And so you basically get the ability to do these drugs, and you lose the ability to aim down sights or use cover, but then any enemy you kill just like massively heals you.
Oh.
So yeah, so just, and it's interesting because, for example, I have an exotic piece of gear that makes me 50% more accurate when not aiming down sights. So, like, point being, it's actually possible to, build your entire build around these weird, like, one-off abilities that are only going to be here for, 3 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's all I have that is not Silk Song.
Okay. I figured we should get that. And Silk Song is all that I have. Mm-hmm. How far have you gotten?
Not a whole lot farther. This has been a crazy week.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. I think I just am still exploring the lava zone,
the marrow.
Yes, yeah.
Or the docks. They're both a little bit lava-y. And so you haven't beaten Lace yet.
No, I made it to her and fought her. This is so far by far my favorite boss fight.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. But yeah, I haven't beat her yet.
Yeah, Lace is like a real fast, like nimble, basically like a match for Hornet in a lot of ways. Like, and she can parry you like crazy. Like, the big thing that you have to do is not get riposted, or if you do, like, get out of the way because she does like this. It's almost like Ricard's rapier or whatever it is from Dark Souls, where it's like the flurry of like thrusts or whatever.
Right.
It's just this really fast, kind of like choreographed kind of fight. I love it.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of either the hunter fights from Bloodborne or, in Dark Souls 3, what is it? Like the duelists or whatever, that one boss fight?
Yeah, I forget the name of it. Yeah, sorry.
But yeah, basically, one of those fights where instead of fighting a big monster, you're in effect, like you said, kind of fighting another version of yourself.
Yes. It feels very reminiscent. I forget if you have to fight. Yeah, you do. You do have to fight Hornet. It's a little bit like fighting Hornet in Hollow Knight.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, so you're poking around in the docks. Yep. Like, have you seen any other cool shit?
Trying to think. I like the various bell themed enemies that you kind of have in that area. Mm-hmm. And I also like the blacksmith you meet. it's just a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I made it to the ant area, but don't actually have what I need to go anywhere in it.
Oh, are you talking about the Hunter's March or whatever it is? Yep. You do have what you need. It's just hard.
Okay.
Yeah. So those red kind of like tree bud kind of things, those are pogo targets.
Oh, okay.
So if you do the down and attack, and she does that like diagonal kind of attack, mm-hmm. and will bounce up. You've got to bounce in between those. This is something that I didn't know, because I have never once been able to accumulate the 500 rosary beads that would be necessary to go up and get this. But like throughout the game, you'll go and do these like little like mini dungeon challenge things, like cathedrals or sanctuaries or something like that. And you unlock, I think they're crests is what they are. Okay. These are a little bit like different like combat stances. I believe the comparison would be in Devil May Cry 3, maybe.
Okay, sure.
Like, it's not like a weapon change. It's more the like the style of attack that you have. Mm-hmm. One of the things that changes is what happens when you press down an attack. So it will change the pogoing. Okay. I found the diagonal one to be really difficult to do, just because like I'm trying to triangulate off of the back of it. It's a lot. But there's one you can get near the beginning of the game that requires 500 an investment of, you can need to buy a 500 rosary key to get inside of it. And that just gives you like straight up just the move set and pogo from Hollow Knight. Okay. But even like a little bit later on, one that's easier to get to, I think it might even be in the Hunter's March, it's called the Reaper Crest. And okay. That is like slower attacks that let you build it more silk as you land attacks. But the downward attack is like a big like arc, like swipe underneath you.
That's pretty cool.
That combined with, if you beat Lace, you can go into an area and do a side quest to get the gliding feature where she, like, the dress poofs out.
Yeah, that is
looks ridiculous.
The best animation I've seen in a long, long time.
It's the most adorable thing in the entire world. Also makes those platforming things a little bit easier.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
yeah.
Gives you a glide.
Did the previous game have the ability to like change up your moveset?
I can't recall. It's been so long since I played it. It's been like 7 years. So I can't recall if there's anything drastically. I know that you can like either upgrade or change your nail. But I don't know if that does a huge amount to change it. I believe it is the same pogo the entire way through.
Nice. I like the idea of changing that up. That's a good addition.
There may be situations where you need one pogo versus the other, but so far all of the crest stuff seems very optional.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
How doable is it to get the 500 like rosary beads or whatever you need to get?
I was most of the way there, and then I just had a dumb death and I lost it all.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, and I've not been able to recover because, like, you know, some of the stuff we talked about last week, I've run into it, and now I'm starting to feel like the not being able to accumulate the rosaries that you want, like it's real heartbreaking because your major source of the rosaries are like pickups that you find in the world, not even like the weird little like consumables that you get, but like, oh, there are some strings with rosaries hanging around, and you attack them and you get like 15, 20 of them at a time. Here's a big bowl of them, you knock it loose and then you grab them all. Those don't respawn. So if you lose any of the rosaries that you had in that, they're gone forever.
Permagon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it feasible to like convert like this economy into like trans or things that you have permanently? Like, I know last week they said there was like maybe a 20% tax or something like that.
To buy the rosary strings. Yeah.
Yeah. So is it feasible to like build up progress over time, or does it feel like you're constantly resetting?
I'm doing my best to hold on to this stuff. I basically never think to go and cash in, but also I'm spending everything when I get it. So like,
okay,
I can save up the 500, or I could buy the maps for the areas as I get to them.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Is basically the trade-off that I end up doing on this.
So you're still making permanent progress, but it's just doing different things.
I'm just spending it on different stuff instead.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would like to see them maybe even just like double the drop rate of rosary beads on the enemies that have them, or make every enemy drop them.
Yeah, even just a couple. Like, diegetically, it makes sense. You know, like, you are going through a world of pilgrims, you know, and the religious pilgrims, basically anything that would have once been a sentient walking talking bug that has fallen to this game's version of hollowing has gotten corrupted by the silk or whatever. Those will be the things that drop the rosaries. And you can farm for them. You can grind for them. There are, you know, guides you can look up that say like, hey, just run this circuit. But if you're farming, if farming is the answer, that doesn't feel like much of an answer to me. I strongly dislike it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there are a lot of things like that, Moxie, where I do find myself wishing that, like, not for like an easy mode, but like something that would take tedium away.
Yes. 100%.
So I know with like the Dark Souls games, it's like kind of the answer to like farming is it's like, no, just go kill the next boss and like you'll get way more like points than you would by like spending 2 hours doing this. Is there anything like that in this game?
Or? You don't get rosaries for killing bosses. It's not guaranteed.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but like just, you know, just like a numbers thing. So like for people who are playing who are kind of unaware, sorry, there's a horn in the background. There's nothing we can do about it.
My bad.
Oh, don't worry. Yeah. So for people's reference, I just beat Gloomwing, I think. The moth boss that guards the front gate of like the town, like kind of what will act as the hub for the majority of the game. And I like that boss fight. The moves in it, like the moveset of this big scary moth that is attacking you is real. It's good. It's, you can internalize it. Like, you know, okay, he makes this sound. He's going to do a big swipe over the arena. He's going to send out these spinning blades. He's going to, you know, lash out with his claws. There's a distinct phase change where like, it's still all of those same attacks, but like each of them gets like a little complication and they like segue into each other a little bit more. Mm. Like all of that is cool. Like I have it internalized how to deal with this thing. I haven't counted, again, things that came up last week, Moxie. I haven't counted how many hits it took, but this is the first one where I was like, oh, that's too many hits.
Yeah.
that's too many hits for this thing to take. So like, I can very reliably get it to its second phase and I can keep locked in, but eventually I'm going to get hit by something and it only takes like a spiral of, you know, being hit by one and then being off guard for the follow-up to just be taken out. And then you're back doing the run-up and all of that. So like, I've kind of found myself at this point in the game, like almost wishing that I had gotten the PC version of it so I could like use like Wiimote or something. Cause like, if I could just make it so regular enemies had like 20% less health,
right,
and bosses had like 35% less health or one third, like it might be in a sweet spot for me based on what I've encountered so far.
Mm.
Right. Like don't change anything else. Just change the amount of time that you need to sustain perfect reaction to everything. Right.
Mm. That I see this kind of as analogous to like, I had that issue with the Astro Boy, like the final level for that is like, there's no checkpoints. And so it's like, hey, yeah, can you do these 20 platforming things back to back? Like, I know you can do one of them with like 95% accuracy, but it's going to be really hard for you to do that 20 times. And it's like, it's a weird way to do difficulty, you know, and especially in this one, because it sounds like instead of doing like 20 different things, it's like you're doing three or four things or responding to three or four different stimulus. And it's like,
I can see
that getting wearing thin.
And the randomness with which they can, you know, can segue into the other, you know, adjusting to the position. It's just like, I don't mind like the stakes that I feel getting hit. It's just that it feels so lopsided. And, you know, this gets into Souls difficulty discourse.
Gamer police coming over.
yeah. Cause I'm not calling for an easy mode. What I'm saying is like just the balance to me increasing. And this has been my line for fucking ever since Sekiro, at least I think even like talking about the DLC in the DLC for Dark Souls 3, I talked about this. Sustained perfection, a demand for sustained perfection is not an interesting way to make something more difficult to me, right?
It's not an enjoyable way to make things more difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. Like to me, the way to make something more difficult is to is to like make the move set more intricate, make it more aggressive, change the space, right?
Are there options to deal with this? Like go somewhere else, like upgrade your abilities so that instead of it taking like 20 hits, it takes like 15 hits or something like that to like kind of artificially do what you're talking about, but within the rules of the game? Or
so I can sequence break, which would involve doing something that makes the boss I was fighting disappear, which doesn't feel good. Yeah. And I can upgrade my needle, but I do not know what the damage multiplier is on that. Like how much more effective it's going to make it. Like if it's okay, now it suddenly does double damage, or if it's some bullshit, like it's 1.1 or whatever.
Yeah.
And like the things that you need, there are three possible like oils that you can get to do the base upgrade on the sword damage. Mm-hmm. Like to get the second one to improve it more, you have to like play through basically to almost like the second third of the game, the end of the second third of the game to get that.
Okay.
So like there's not as much as that. Yeah. There's no way to grind to like level up. I found like I've gone and done some side quests and found like crests that, you know, give you a little bit of invulnerability when you're healing. Not perfect invulnerability, but it's the thing says that's what it does. So I'm feeling a bit of the difficulty stuff here. And of course I've not even gotten close to what people say is difficult, but yeah, talking about the axis on which stuff can get meaningfully difficult to my definition of meaningful. Mm. In the middle of that, we were joined by Dennis. Hey, Dennis.
Yeah, whatever chicken I sacrificed was the correct one. Hello, I have made it on.
I sacrificed a chicken. I had a chicken breast for dinner. So
okay, that finally reached the gods, and yeah, I'm through. Okay.
What program did you have to shed in order to make Zencastr work?
Motherfucker, I don't know.
Oh, so you literally just tried and it worked?
So here's how far I got. So I've been going down. I don't know how much you said earlier, but like
I just had technical difficulties, but like it's saying we can't access your microphone. And yeah. I'm familiar with that problem. If a system has like called dibs on the microphone and something else is calling dibs for it, it can fuck it up. So something was claiming your microphone.
Except over the course of the past week and a half,
you got it working
all up in them guts of the system settings and know for a fact that error is not because something is in fact using the microphone.
Right.
So I'm like, what the fuck? I've tried every browser. I've tried deleting every other program that has called on the microphone recently, all that stuff. And I had it working on Friday. I thought because I deleted the right program. Then I come back in to record tonight and it's the error is back. So I'm like freaking out. You guys soldier on. I go through all the steps I'd tried before again and then try to get creative. I literally went and dug out. Hold on. Where is it? I went and dug out my fucking decade old Mac that has a hard line.
That might be what you need. Yeah.
And plugged into that. Got the same error on that.
Are you fucking kidding me?
So then
I'm like, network thing. It has to be a network thing.
I'm still using Google Chrome. I try it in Safari. That's unsupported. Go back to Chrome and I'm like, on a lark, let me bring up a guest profile on Chrome.
Okay.
Plug it in and lo and behold, on the Mac, that seems to have worked.
Okay.
I'm not getting the error on the guest profile. So I'm like, okay. Well, I don't like, you know, I had everything hooked up to the Mac, but I would rather be doing this on my PC.
Yeah.
Maybe if I pull up a guest profile on my PC, maybe it's my profile in Chrome. So I go open my profile in Chrome just to grab the link so I can paste it into a guest profile.
And it worked.
I'm on my profile here in Chrome.
The fact that it happened on the Mac as well, nobody cares. It's not interesting. I think that you need to share like the bizarre triumph of that because this has been frustrating.
Yes, I'm over here like on the verge of tears and it is a personal victory.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a commemorative plaque.
Okay.
And then replicate
the solution before you commit anything to engraving.
Yeah, if I knew what caused the solution, I would. I would try. So
I take solace in that I can blame a tech company for it. So
yes.
Yeah. There you go. So yeah, if anyone could just feel like an aura of screaming hair pulling stress underneath the episode to that point, that was me.
Okay.
That was my spiritual contribution to the show until this point.
Yeah.
It's all good. I mean, I'm here now.
Okay, so good.
It's nothing but good vibes from here on out, unless I drop, in which case I will break something.
Okay.
You're pretty on time as well for the, as far as if you want to talk about what you've been playing. But
right. Yeah. So. Yeah. So I literally was like kind of like getting into wrapping up talking about Silk Song. Moxie had played it a little bit more, and I had gotten to like the first big like wall boss that people talk about getting to.
Silk Song easy. From the time I've played, so
you know. not in my experience.
I'm just being an asshole. I have played it. I have enjoyed it, but I am also a noted enjoyer of overly difficult things.
Yeah.
So like my tolerance levels for bullshit difficulty is, is enabling me to enjoy Silk Song.
You also haven't gotten anything that is like bullshit difficult, I don't think.
I've gotten to through Hunter's Marsh to the Beast Fly headed.
Okay. Right. Yeah. No, the Beast Fly is the fucking pits. All my homies hate the Beast Fly.
Yeah. Fuck the Beast Fly. That has been hard. I think the only thought I will contribute is so much of me mastering games is figuring out what to look at.
Right.
And like, As I get familiar with the bosses or familiar with the track or the whatever, it's like you see less and less of it. You lock in on the one thing that you know is the indicator or the trigger that that you need to cue off of.
You learn what to focus on.
Yeah. And so that has been the case for each of the bosses so far. The problem with Beastfly is that it pulls in a bunch of summons, and now suddenly I'm trying to track four of those things at once. Bait the Beastfly into killing them. And then so yeah, like where to look is a harder and harder thing to define.
Yeah. And the Beastfly doesn't move with any real rhyme or reason on Blue Sky. I was talking to somebody and he was calling that fight bullshit. And I was like, it's like somebody's like dragging it around with a mouse without really looking. There's just somebody connected through the network who was fucking with me.
You can, especially if you are standing like, I don't know, a quarter to a third of the way away from the edge of the screen. That's when pretty much all of its windups look identical.
Yeah.
And so like you can overcome it a little bit by making sure you are either tucked into a corner or off, like, you know, as far away from it as possible.
Yeah.
But even then, once summons start popping up, like all bets are off.
It can also like stack like the there's like a weird, like it feels like it ignores iframes in a way that other shit doesn't. Yeah, I saw it was optional. And I was like, I don't need the crest that's behind that until a cheese strat that I need later demands that I get it. So,
but despite all that, we all agree the game is a masterpiece and everyone wants to be Hornet, right?
Yes.
Hornet's great. Okay. I don't know about masterpiece. It's neat so far, but it's like my thesis remains the same. It's more Hollow Knight. Cool.
Yeah. I had wavered because I never finished or got beyond like the fifth or sixth area in Hollow Knight. And so I was like, should I go back and play it to like get through that and then do Silk Song, or should I go straight to Silk Song? And I think I made the right decision in going straight to Silk Song because I was not burnt out on Hollow Knight by the time I got to Silk Song.
Yes.
Given how proximate they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other things any questions about Silk Song for me or any more thoughts you had on it, Dennis?
I took video at one point. I still got to post it, but like before you unlock the dash, every screen that I would move across, you just kind of tap a tap a tap the jump button rhythmically, and Hornet skips across the screen, and it's
skipping to her loo.
Yes.
Yeah. What else have you been playing?
What else have I been playing? Man, the other big one is I delved into Borderlands 4.
I saw you on Steam playing that.
Yes. And I mean, I know you're not supposed to like say this, but I'm having a great time with it. Like,
I don't know that you're not supposed to say it.
Yeah. Well, that the idea is that would give Randy Pitchford some level of solace in some way.
Now, we'll make sure he doesn't hear this.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. I know he's an avid listener. So yeah, it is an open world Borderlands, which sounds a little bit funny because all the other ones were such big sandboxes. Ultimately they were areas separated by loading screens. But the way they've committed to an open world format in the game design, makes a big difference from just the, you know, large, but ultimately separate sandboxes. I think for 4 play sessions now, I have had a main quest objective marked on the map. And every time I sit down, I'm like, all right, this is the time. I'm going to go over there and do the thing. And every time I get pulled into something random and fun and spend my session just doing random stuff that I didn't expect. Mm-hmm. And the game has been an absolute blast every step of the way. It trades on its weapons. I have a sniper rifle that charges up. And so you can kind of almost select a size for how hard you want to hit something. Mm-hmm. I have a submachine gun that alternates between, incendiary and shock, shooting. And it's kind of like Roman candle style, bullets. So there's a little pew, pew, pew as you, fire it. The difference from previous games is I always felt like the different damage types didn't really mean that much. And the time it took you to switch to the right weapon or switch to the right weapon mode, wasn't worth it in terms of just pouring damage into
just,
them.
You can overcome it just with a little bit of extra time. Yeah.
In this, I've frequently, you know, especially with that one SMG, started on shock, melted off their shields, then gone to incendiary. And I feel like more enemies have shields, in the game than did in 3 and 2 to my memory. So like it is incentivizing that kind of match your damage to the enemy kind of play. I also have an assault rifle that I am only using its secondary mode because it is an overwhelmingly powerful shotgun. And like if I'm firing bullets from this AR, something has gone terribly wrong. I had previously had a shotgun that I kind of swapped over to and used as a finisher. The one that is like the quote unquote secondary fire on my AR is more powerful and regenerates ammo. And so while I can't use it as my primary weapon, because like that little reserve of ammo would run dry too quickly, as long as I'm switching over and using it as a finisher, it is way better than any shotgun proper that I've seen.
Okay.
And then my grenade is actually a saw blade launcher where the saw blades, after they hit the ground, jump up and, fly a second time at whatever is nearby.
Is any of the stuff that was present in previous games, or is this them just sitting around thinking of new stuff or weapons to do?
I mean, you know, it's the same kind of stuff. The new manufacturers that I've seen so far are Daedalus and the Order. So the Order, all the weapons have that kind of charge up mechanic.
Okay.
Where like whenever you let go, that's how strong the shot is going to be. And there's like, you know, 5-ish pips that you can charge. And then the Daedalus weapons all, as their secondary fire, do the same thing, but consume a different ammo type. So that, you know, makes it easier to manage ammo reserves. The saw blade stuff, I can't think I've seen before. So ordnance is now a dedicated slot. Instead of needing to use one of your weapon inventory slots to equip a rocket launcher, it just goes into your grenade slot like anything else would, but grenades, rocket launchers, saw blade launchers, throwing knives have gone in there. Like there's kind of this catch-all slot that it does not require ammo, but there's always some kind of charging or delay mechanic. to gate how often you can access those things. You can imagine with throwing knives, it's pretty quick that they recharge. With a giant rocket launcher, there's a longer delay. Same with grenades.
Right. That makes sense.
But yeah, tearing around the open world and just kind of getting into anything that you see has been very rewarding. The writing has been very amusing and to my taste, although I think it's been promoted that they've gone less meme-y and self-referential. That's
what I have heard from people playing it is they expected slop and they didn't get slop. And this is people whose tastes I tend to,
Borderlands 3 was just a never ending parade of remember this character from last game? Remember this character from last game? And on and on. This one stands on its own. There are cameos, but they are cameos. Mm-hmm. And in general, I think that was a very strong decision.
Yeah.
The world feels very big. I think I'm the mission progress thing on my save file says I'm 16% of the way done with the game. And it's a massive area that I've uncovered. Mm-hmm. But as I zoom out in the map, it really is only a small percentage of what's out there. Yeah. And even within that, I've found so much just poking around and having fun.
You're going to, is that the mainline quest and there's just a bunch of side things to do or? Okay.
Yep.
Gotcha.
For the mainline quest, the way they've separated it from the previous game is the world you are on is a hidden secretive prison world. I've described it to people as the North Korea of Borderlands, where it's, kind of off and away from everyone and secluded, isolationist, etc. There's a big thing that happens at the end of Borderlands 3 that warps an entire moon away. What you find out at the start of Borderlands 4 is the moon has been warped into orbit of this new world. And thus an influx of vault hunters and, the planet's called Kairos, non-Kairos people, are shunted onto the planet, and that upsets the order, that, sets a whole bunch of things in motion. You are trying to, get out from under the thumb of this vicious dictator that rules the world. And second off, because you're a vault hunter, find a vault. So
right.
that's kind of the thrust of the story. But the, side quests abound, and it's just a chance for them to, do different skits, tell different jokes, et cetera. So yeah, it's a performance. I'm playing on PC. I know performance issues have been the main headlines, and our man, Randy Pitchford, has not helped with that. Mm-hmm. Just kind of mouthing off. And I,
what's he saying? Skill issue or what?
Basically, you try to make a better engine, or it's a premium game for premium players. You shouldn't expect that it'll run on bad hardware. And nothing that he's saying is technically wrong. but he's saying it in such a way.
It's a premium game. We need premium players.
I know. I'm going to say it is technically wrong, because it's a lot of it is taking the responsibility off of the company for performance issues and putting it onto the consumer.
They're the ones who made the game. It doesn't matter if I could or couldn't make a better one. You were supposed to deliver a product that worked the way I expected.
They and God, you guys are going to put me in the position of defending Randy Pitchford.
Why? You don't have to.
They made the game. The responsibility is on them. They also set the specs that they recommend for it, and those specs were high and demanding and whatever. But they did not lie about what you needed to make the game run smoothly.
They just lied about what it would run on.
No, they didn't. That's the thing, is they were very overt up front, saying hey, we're not trying to optimize this for older machines. We're just going to go all in on this hardware. And they laid out the minimum and recommended specs. So
do we know if people on console are having issues? Because if it hasn't been optimized for older machines, the consoles that are out now, they're 5 years old. And we're not especially great at the time.
Yeah. So consoles have been fine to my understanding.
Okay.
That said, the aesthetic of Borderlands and what I've seen so far in the game is not what I would expect to require higher end hardware.
Right.
Like that's the whole part of the whole allure of the Borderlands look is that it kind of stays looking good, even though it's not super complicated.
That's cell shading in general.
Yeah. And so for them to have jettisoned that performance wise without making any meaningful differences that I can tell looks wise is mystifying. And then the way they communicate about that has been absolutely douchey. So you know, that is what it is. That said, I am, you know, I meet most of the specs. I'm one step below their recommended graphics card. Like they recommend a 3080 and I'm on a 3070, but I'm playing on medium and it's been fine. So, know, I can't speak to others' experiences. And if someone is playing on hardware they said would run the game and it's not, that's a different thing. But from what I've seen, they marketing speak, PR spin, announced that, hey, we're kind of just committing to higher level hardware.
Right.
Again, saying it in the douchiest way possible. And then people were mad that it didn't run on their older hardware. And then they responded with, yeah, we told you, in the douchiest way possible.
Just because your game is irritating and irreverent doesn't mean that you can, it doesn't get, it doesn't. Yeah. Moxie, you look kind of like you had stuff to say about this.
I'm just wondering, what's his name? Randy Pitchfork. Why is he still allowed to talk?
Yeah.
That one I cannot answer you.
Does he have like a Mark Zuckerberg situation where he can't be fired?
I think maybe. He's kind of the guy for Borderlands. Yeah, and
Like everything you describe about the game sounds interesting and fun to play, but everything about how the game's been marketing is like enough for me to be like, I just don't want to play this at all.
I think the most damning thing I can say is that, like, I realized at some point that, like, just subconsciously, I assume that Randy Pitchfork is Claptrap.
Oh. You start reading everything in his voice.
Yeah,
Claptrap is his spirit animal.
Yeah.
That's everything I have to say about my experience playing the game is positive. Everything I have to say about the marketing surrounding the game and you know what specifically Randy Pitchford has contributed to the discussion is bad. And I feel bad. I don't want to shit on, you know, the rest of the team. I assume that has put their heart and soul into this because they made something that's genuinely fun.
If he's out there agitating people and messing up their expectations and putting them off their beer, that's him not serving the team very well.
Yeah. Well, and that's, again, I don't know how much of it is messing up expectations because they said from the get-go, like, this is going to require a higher performance machine to run. And then that was true. And I think people are just used to like, oh, well, it should run on a Steam Deck or something like that.
Right.
And it, you know, I don't know enough to tell the developer like, yeah, this should run on simpler hardware. Maybe people who do are justifiably mad.
I think I'd be more like empathetic to that argument if it was like a game that's doing something that hasn't been done. If it was like No Man's Sky or something, it's like, hey, we have all this data that we had to manage and it's like really hard for us to do. Or if it was like really high fidelity graphics or something like that, where it's like, okay, I can understand like how this needs to be high performance, but it's Borderlands. It's like,
yeah.
It sounds like what happened is like they shifted out to Unreal Engine and then maybe this is the first time that they're making a game on that. And then it's like technical difficulties with that. And so that's what it's like. You should probably own that if that's what the issue is, which what it seems like, you know, from my perspective, but yeah, so that's why I'm aggravated with it.
Yeah. Unreal Engine 5 going to Unreal Engine 5.
Yeah.
That is
not optimized. Why did they go to Unreal Engine 5? Cause isn't that for like photorealistic games?
Yeah. And then that's the thing too. It's like, if he's tweeting out, like, I'd like to see you build an engine. It's like, dude, I'd like to see you build an engine then too. It's like, you're using a different one.
What's his name? Witness guy needs to get involved in that discussion.
John Wood. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, if you were a fan of Borderlands 2, ooh, Borderlands 4 is absolutely going to do it for you. If not, then you know, you're not, there's nothing revolutionary about 4 that's going to redeem the series in your eyes. But I have been having lots of fun with it.
So what if you liked Borderlands 1 and 3, but hated 2 with the passion of an undying star?
Then your mind is an unfathomable maze, and I can only assume you've been touched by an elder god that cares about Borderlands for some reason.
Okay, fair enough.
No, it, honestly, if you liked 3, I can't speak to 1, I didn't really play 1, but if you liked 3, it's 4 will probably be fine. It's just, it feels like it has captured the vibe of 2 in a way that I like.
Mm.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like highlights to share so far. Planned content wise or like quest wise. You go around trying to help cows that have been abducted by UFOs. That's fun. You help Claptrap deal with his past in a very funny way.
Don't we know everything about his past?
Yes. It's not that there's new revelations to the player. It's mostly like he is, on this new world, hanging on to all this memorabilia from Pandora and sending you into very dangerous situations to try to retrieve it for him. And he's presenting as like, I have mission critical intel that I need you to retrieve, or I have, assets that we need. And it's like, this is a framed picture of Mad Moxie. This is not important for our resistance. And then talking him through that. Favorite line is, as he's talking about that, he's like, I feel like I got Mad Moxie in a way other people didn't. Everyone else just stared at her gazongas, but I really listened to her gazongas.
Okay. So Claptrap shit.
Claptrap shit.
Okay.
Yeah, that's Borderlands 4. I got one other indie game that I played just before Silksong and Borderlands 4 hit.
Okay.
That I want to give a recommend to. It's a game called I Am Your Beast.
Oh, yeah.
Third person action game.
First person. Yeah. And it is Hotline Miami from a first person perspective.
Okay.
Also in the woods. You are some kind of elite agent that disappeared to live a peaceful life, and your old general is trying to force you back into the game because they need you for one last job. And you're just, viciously killing anyone that he sends into your peaceful neck of the woods. While trying to, be like, no, I'm serious. I'm not coming back. Please stop sending people, 'cause I'm going to keep on killing them. And the moment to moment is extremely Hotline Miami, in that you most people are a one hit kill. When you knock someone out or down, they'll usually like fall and throw their weapon up in the air, so you can grab that out of the air to then use against other people. You can kill people, but just by jumping on their heads, like you're fucking Mario. It's great. Mm-hmm. But every level is on a timer, and different types of kills return different amounts of time to you, and you're scored on how fast you can get through the level. So real fun, kind of puzzle aspect to it as you try to find the route through every level that is optimal and then adjust on the fly as stuff goes off the rails. Inevitably.
What gives you the most amount of time back? What kind of kill?
So far, what's given me the most amount of time back is trap kills.
Mm.
So, and you might imagine, like, you find bear traps in the game and you can set that, and then if someone steps on it,
you're in the woods, it's obligatory.
Yeah. Yes. And that requires a little bit of extra planning and knowledge of the map to pull off. So I understand. The hilarious thing is you can also just throw the trap and have it snap on their heads as it hits them in the air. And that gives you the same amount of time back.
People pay a lot of money to have stuff delivered to them.
Yes. So, and that realization was a huge moment, because I'd been, trying to plan out my route, and here's where the bear trap's going to go. And this guy usually, but I pulled him when I, stepped out of line there, and how can I? And then I just, in a moment of panic, threw the trap at a person instead of on the ground. and was like, oh, huh. As the person is like, you know, in front of me, it's like, oh, that's pretty handy. So yeah. I'm probably halfway through it right now.
You're making this sound really cool. I just kind of wrote it off because of the aesthetic. It didn't really do much for me, but hearing that it is like just little improvisational sandboxes is fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in every level, you know, there's the score for getting through the level proper. Sometimes it's kill every enemy. Sometimes it's just reach the exit. Sometimes it's you have to interact with things in the level before you reach the exit. So some combination of those things. But the first time you beat the level, it'll give you a like extra objective that's like, you know, only use hip fire or don't kill anyone going through the level or what have you. When you beat that, it gives you another extra objective and you're scored time wise for each of those because some of them are, you know, very inefficient ways to play. But you can still try to do that challenge run, as it were, for every level as quickly as possible. And I like the little like audio snippets that bookend the levels, which is just, you know, your person shit talking the general. Mm-hmm. and him increasingly flying off the rails at you.
Yeah.
It seems like they are building, so I don't want to spoil what it is, but it seems like they might be setting out like extra objectives on top of what's on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on some of the dialogue and things that you say, it's like, ooh, maybe I should be looking for that in the level. Or like, I wonder if I can actually find a bad guy behaving that way and then do something different. And so I don't know, but I sense that there's a whole level of like, okay, you did the main objective, you did the bonus objectives, now go get the secret objectives.
Yeah.
I'm still chugging through it my first time. How does
the narrative like progress at all, or does like the maps and like the area that you're in, does that progress at all throughout the game? Or
yeah, I haven't revisited any areas yet.
Okay.
But every map is a new area, and it's very much set up to like a Tony Hawk level to have lines and you know, different opportunities kind of put out in front of you.
But is it like you're starting at the woods, you're still in the woods sort of thing, or does there feel like a progression with that?
The latest level that I played was like the people that the general was sending after me had dug a trench system.
Okay.
And so you were kind of sprinting through and over this system of trenches. Still a woodsy aesthetic, but that was very different than anything I'd encountered before. So I think they do a good job of a variety on that front.
Yeah.
And the whole driving force of the game is I want to stay in the woods. I will not leave the woods. So okay. I'd be surprised if they strayed too far from it.
I do have to say, digging a horse trench system seems a little excessive for that. Like
highly, highly inefficient. It's probably why your character left in the first place, was just these bullshit management decisions.
It was the holes unit. Yeah.
But yeah, it really scratched that, you know, we all have to compare everything to one of our four main games.
Right.
So it really scratched that, Trackmania itch of like, I got to do this run as fast as possible. And I'm doing a lot of restarts cause I missed that jump kill or 360 no scope or whatever. But then when you get it right, it's very satisfying.
For me, it is tripping my, like the description is tripping like a twitchier version of like a teardown run. With less, with improvisation instead of the meticulous planning, I guess.
Yeah. Less destruction, more murder.
Yeah.
I will say one thing that is funny is I mentioned hip fire kills versus not. So you can aim down sights, but really your guy just takes his gun and turns it sideways, like brap, mm-hmm. brap out the side of the car style.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you're not aiming down the sights. It did give me a little more accuracy, but that's wicked not how that works.
No. So.
Very, very stylistic with those kinds of choices.
Yeah. I got this confused with Strange Scaffold's other action game, El Paso Elsewhere, which is third person. Kind of like a Max Payne kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's,
I recognize Max Payne that name, but
with vampires.
Yes.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, it is, man, it has been a good time for new games. I feel like everything I've touched recently has been like, all right, sweet. Like
a lot of good stuff out there.
Good time for your kids to go back to school. I tell you what. Yeah. So that is me.
Multiplayer.
Now to start with the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I want your quotables. I wanted to know about a video game quote that has stuck with you, be it because it was wise or funny or anything else. Yeah, we're going to do this. Quotes.
Yeah, and I'll get us started here with Curtis, who says, this is a quote from Commissioner Pravin Lal from Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri. Beware of he who would deny you access to information, for in his heart he dreams himself your master.
So that game came out like in the last month or so, right?
Yeah. Alpha Centauri is like a 30-year-old game, I think.
Really?
Yeah, you know.
Why is that quote staying so relevant?
Just because governments don't change.
Dystopia is going to dystope.
Yeah. Let's see. That went quicker than I thought it would. Let me get back to this here. Moxie, what does Warren say?
Warren says, "Draw your sword, Ramza." I don't know what a Ramza is. It's the only lesson I learned in church.
Referring to a battle in Final Fantasy Tactics that is very infamous for being a place where, like, you save right before it so you can't leave and therefore can't level up, and it's a one-on-one duel, and Ramza, the main character, might not be spec'd in such a way that he can survive it, which is going to be fixed in the remaster. So,
I like to think that this was the only lesson he learned in church, not because he was playing whatever this would have been, Game Boy Advance or Game Boy.
Probably would have been playing it in a like on PSP maybe, but also the fight takes place inside of a church.
Ah, I see. Well, my headcanon is that there was a really good sermon put together that used that scene as a central reference point.
I mean, the internet, as someone who's never played this game, the internet has led me to believe that it is nothing but socialist talking points.
Yeah, I mean, it's the one quote. I can't even remember if it's from this game, but it's the if the punishment for a crime is a fine, then crime is legal for the rich or something like that.
Oh, but yeah, then the law only exists for the rich or for the poor or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, no, you're dealing with revolutions and stuff in FFT. It's a good game. I can't wait for the remaster to come out. Because right now, like, the only best way to play it is on the iPad, which is fine, but it's not ideal. Let's see, Ben, what does SpiritWolf85 say?
Spirit Wolf says, "I have two for this. First, the fears, here comes another one," from MGS3. "For my dozen plus playthroughs, that bark has completely wormed its way into my brain." I will rebut with that with Tommy Gun. It's me, so I can relate to that.
That's the pain, though.
That is, yeah. The second one is, "May you find the worth in the waking world," from Bloodborne. "The doll always gets a polite bow after her little farewell."
May you find your wealth in the waking world. Love that doll.
No, you both screwed it up.
"May you find your worth in the waking world."
There you go.
Oh, I thought I said it right. Maybe I mush-mouthed it.
Sorry, it's not, yeah, we got it.
it's out there. Good,
it's in there.
Yeah. Dennis, what does RJ Sebastian say?
Yeah, they say Harvester in general just stays in your mind. I do not recognize the game or the screenshot or the quote, but the quote is, "Well, you always were a kidder, Steve."
Harvester is a point-and-click adventure game that is very mid-90s. You're playing as somebody who, like, lives in basically a nightmare world, and you die, but you get a chance to claim enough souls to come back to life or something like that. You're going around and killing people. This is the character talking to his mom, trying to explain what's going on, and she's not taking him seriously.
You know you can grab those knives off in the corner of the screenshot there.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And I don't like that crib in the foreground one bit.
Yeah, a crib in the kitchen is odd. And yeah. I'm trying to see, it looks like there's a little, Eat, Pray, Love cross stitch on the wall, but
looks like it.
Excel Turkey 81 something. The pixels are getting the best of me there, but
Harvester's interesting. I wouldn't call it good, but it's interesting. Some really freaky imagery in that.
There are worse things to be in the world.
The Gamer Freak says, and there's a lot of caps. I was going to say stairs. No. And I think this is what the serial number for Claptrap, the robot.
Mm, correct. Yep.
Okay. They say, anytime I play games with friends and we come to stairs, I will always yell this, always. Okay.
That is from Borderlands 2.
Okay.
And is set up over the course of literally the entire game.
Okay.
Just enough throwaway references to the fact that Claptrap can't climb stairs.
Okay.
That you know you've heard about it, but you kind of forgot until a big reveal right before the final boss fight.
Okay.
Pays it off. So all right. It is well done.
Let's see. Moxie, what does Billy say?
Billy says, Laurentius of the Great Swamp from Dark Souls. Goodbye, then. Be safe, friend. Don't you dare go hollow. Something about the voice line sounds like he genuinely cares about you. I once, in the middle of a panic attack, booted up Dark Souls just to hear him say it, and it made me feel better.
Laurentius is so solid. That is the kind of beginner pyromancer.
Oh, okay. The barrel guy.
Yeah. The barrel guy. He is great. He does genuinely care about you. You do not want to tell him about the higher level pyromancy because it will doom him. I like that character so much. So a listener, Rev, I believe from the We're Not Wizards podcast, if I'm remembering correctly, used to do like draw avatars. And they made me, they asked like, hey, what Souls characters do you want to be as? And, I was like, I want Laurentius. And then, I think that they asked like, okay, give me a couple. And I said, I want to do either Laurentius or do Alfred from Bloodborne. Both kind of real solid guys, although Alfred loses his mind. And they made both. I've got it up on my wall of fan art. It's very nice.
Nice.
Laurentius is real solid.
Who was Alfred?
He was the person who was looking for Annalise.
Okay.
Kind of the guy in white robe kind of thing. Oh, like a cleric. Yeah.
It's so funny. There is a real style to the line reads in all the Soulsborne games.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can hear it just reading it and not remembering the specific line, but I know exactly like the cadence, the pauses in what was written by knowing what game it's from.
Absolutely. Let's see, Ben, what does Robinson say?
Yeah, Robinson says, leaving this world isn't as scary as it sounds. From Hotline Miami 2, haunts me. Mm. Second.
That's a good line. I'm haunted. I've never even played the game. I haven't finished it, I guess. And Dennis, what does Callum say?
Yeah, anytime any of my friends say, get over here, someone ends up repeating it in a scorpion voice. Get over here. That's like the it's been a while of the Duck Feed Network.
Yes. that is an original one for us that was Gary mimicking another podcast with the it's been a while or the it's been. Yeah.
So do we culturally appropriate it? Oh no.
I think it was just another white guy. I don't know.
Okay, that's fine. That's culture. Yeah. We can make it our own. Also, I am very disappointed that no one actually did the sing-song response of It's Been a While when I said it.
No, we knew what you meant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew.
Mm-hmm. You've let me down today.
Oh, well.
Some things can stay in the 90s.
I believe Stained, that was the 2000 song.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm not going to Google that. I'll accept being wrong without having to look that up.
Let's see. That was 2001 from their album Break the Cycle. Let's see. Okay. I've got, mine's going to be from Disco Elysium. Do you want to hear a long one, a medium one, or a short one?
All three.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh God. You're going
to, how long that, is that, the long exhausting. One?
Do just a few sentences. When you get the thought to examine to put in your thought cabinet about the Kingdom of Conscience, like learning about like the centrism in the world of Disco Elysium. The description from that is like the most searing thing I have heard about a political philosophy, which is the Kingdom of Conscience will be exactly as it is now. Moralists don't really have beliefs. Sometimes they stumble on one, like a child's on a child's toy left on a carpet. The toy must be put away immediately, and the child reprimanded. Centrism isn't change, not even incremental change. It is control over yourself and the world. Exercise it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It's like they don't have beliefs. They just stumble across them and need to throw them away.
I mean, luckily for us, that is not currently culturally relevant.
In my more depressive episodes, I think about the wall art, the phrasing from that. True love is possible only in the next world for new people. It's too late for us. And then the short one, just detective arriving on the scene at a very triumphant moment.
Is that a refrain, or is it like from a triumphant moment?
Yeah, yeah. In honor of your will, Lieutenant Yefretor, as the guy's rank, that you kept from falling apart in the face of sheer terror, day after day, second by second, detective arriving on the scene. Like you've showed up and you have the answer. Like this is the culmination of all of this humiliation that you've been through. Yeah.
Sometimes self-inflicted.
Yeah, of course. I gave an option and they said all three. I am not monopolizing time.
You had to.
I guess I could have just picked.
It just reveals the fact that we can make a podcast where like 30 minutes of it is reading about Disco Elysium and it would probably be pretty good.
Yeah, it'd probably be fine. Moxie, how about you?
Man, this is tough. Like, I've got tons of them from movies, most of them from Bunraku. Okay. But in terms of games, probably the silliest one, is there's a number of great exchanges in the first Fear game. One of your teammates is just completely done with this shit. And, you get your mission briefing about, clone soldiers being psychically controlled. It just goes off on, this is why no one takes us seriously. But there's a scene later on where you get in, fight your way into this room and find it's just completely full of like mutilated bodies and, blood and stuff like that. And your team's like empath is like, all right, I'm sensing a lot of, rage, from this area. And that guy is like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock.
What game is this?
Fear.
Fear. Okay. That's what I thought. I was like, okay, that's the premium Watch Out for Fireballs, in October.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Has that gotten like a remaster yet?
No,
it was Fear 2 and Fear 3 and whatever.
Yeah, there hasn't been a remaster. It's easily available. Like there's a GOG version that's on Steam. Yeah.
Definitely do yourself a favor. And if the servers are still up, try the multiplayer. Probably the best multiplayer of any first-person shooter I've ever played.
I remember you being super back into that, like even back in the dorms.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
So when a game like this in a series where they have like a bunch of sequels goes back and remakes the first one, do you call it being codified?
I get it. I get it. Yeah.
So they've already done one reboot because most of those expansions weren't done by the original team.
Right.
So
interesting.
Yeah.
The Perseus Mandate.
They also did a free-to-play MMO, something like that. Not like MMO, but free-to-play,
free-to-play, like, deathmatch version.
No, it was, like, a co-op, like, low-budget shooter.
Yeah. Hmm. Huh. Okay. Well, why not?
Ben, how about you?
I'm going to be greedy and say three things, if that's okay.
How dare you?
I'm sorry. The personal one is Shoot the Fucker Mason from Urban Chaos. It's a deep cut.
Rocksteady. Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably because it's in slow motion when like you're shooting like someone in a hostage situation. That's just a personal like earworm. Yeah. And then the other one's like a twofer. War Never Changes from Fallout, and War Has Changed from Metal Gear Solid 3. That's like a fun.
That's four. That's not three.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. It's the 1960s war. Oh man. Yeah, it has because of nukes, I guess. I don't know. They're all over the map. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so mine is a random bark from the Valkyria Chronicles that just has stuck with me and been applicable in so many places in my life. You do something, you stunt on an enemy and you hear the enemy radio bark of, "I'm impressed, but not surprised." And I've used that in so many situations, specifically with my kids. They do something, it's like, "I'm impressed, but not surprised."
Yeah.
Just the perfect.
I'm shocked, but not surprised.
Yeah. I was going to say the greatest compliment I was ever given is, I was shocked, but not surprised.
Yep. So that one, I mean, a game I never actually finished and a series I never revisited in a genre that I don't really play anymore. But lives in my head rent free.
Isn't Valkyria Chronicles like a weird, like hybrid real time turn based strategy?
Yeah, in a way that got me to rage quit it when they wanted you to do a stealth level in that format, which makes no fucking sense.
Not at all. No.
Yeah, but like aesthetics wise, it was very fun, and cool. Has a banger of a quote in the enemy barks.
Cool. Well, good question. Thanks for the answers, everybody. If you would like to participate in these in the future, go on over to follow us on Blue Sky. That's thelevelpodcast.bsky.social, and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Let us see. Moxie, this one looks neat. I want to hear about these. I want to hear about silent cleaning.
Yeah. So, there's a company that makes cleaning products in Japan named, Kao, K-A-O. And at least according to this article, they are, quote, the Procter & Gamble of Japan.
Okay.
Kao Brands is in Cincinnati too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, they have
offices here.
Well, they released a promotional game that is kind of like a power wash simulator game. You receive a old house and a will, and it's completely trashed. So you're using various cow products to try to clean it up so that you can flip the house. The only problem is you're also being stalked by a horrible monster that that will be attracted to like the sound of your cleaning, and so you have to balance how much you clean versus how much sound you make.
Okay.
And the game itself is just. Yo, very the house, the aesthetics reminds me of, have you ever seen the video? It's like a tour of my house or whatever.
Yeah, that guy, that very clearly unwell person who is like cooking stuff on a filthy stove with his bare hands, like holding it over flame. Yeah,
all that stuff. Yeah, it's very the aesthetic reminds me a lot of that. But yeah, this is apparently like an actual, you know, fairly full-featured game. It's apparently like as you clean stuff, you will uncover like clues to solve various puzzles and things like that.
Okay.
So yeah, I don't know. Just in general, I think if we are going to live in a corporate dystopia, like bound by consumerism and marketing, at least, you know, I hope it's some good marketing like this.
This is smart. This is really smart. Get people streaming about it. Like, I don't know. It's, yeah, that's really cool. It almost makes me like, okay, I have one weekend to stream before Silent Hill F comes out. Like, this is not available in English. No. It just came out in August. Like, I don't know. I would need to have a backup plan in case I get to a point where I can't get any further. This might actually be pretty fun.
Mm. Yeah, I mean this calls to mind stuff like Chex Quest and the Burger King games. Like, there's a long history of this sort of thing happening and also being weirdly good.
Right.
Or at least weirdly entertaining.
Not all of them are good, but the ones that are very memorable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think like my assumption from this is like, you know, there are you know, brand managers and people working on this stuff, and usually they're kind of just rotated through the business, so it's not like they're super passionate about their brand. Mm-hmm. But everyone's passionate about something, and so when you get the random person who happens to love video games and, you know, needs to pitch ideas for how they're going to spend their marketing budget, why not shoot your shot, you know?
Yeah.
That is there are worse ways to spend your money, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a good idea. I'll see. We'll see about there being maybe a stream of this
next week. People, it was a terrible idea.
I'll have a backup plan. I just yeah, and I don't know. Maybe somebody in the chat can help me.
That would be fun.
Yeah. Very cool. So Silent Cleaning. Dennis, what is up with Splinter Cell?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just happy there's anything up with Splinter Cell. That is one of the series.
It's been like 15 years, right?
Yeah, one of the most disappointing disappearances of an IP for me. And I wasn't even like a super fan of Splinter Cell. I played the first one, I played, I think, the second one, and Double Agent eventually, which was the last one on the PS2.
Okay.
And just loved the games. Like, was a lot of fun. And they just disappeared with a new generation of consoles. It's coming back now as a TV series. Mm-hmm. So this is Netflix and Ubisoft working together to do Splinter Cell Death Watch. And very interesting to me is like Sam Fisher started old and grizzled from the first game and has just gotten more old and more grizzled game after game after game. And they have really leaned into that for the show. In the trailer, he has got like a full on Santa Claus old man style beard. And it's just, yeah, this is straight up cranky old man yells at Cloud, except the yelling at Cloud is garroting people with night vision goggles on.
I'll be damned. Michael Ironside is still alive.
Yeah.
The voice actor for Sam Fisher. I thought he was like fucking really old.
Oh yeah.
I could have sworn he was dead.
Liev Schreiber is the person who is taking on the character.
Okay.
Yeah. That's Which,
good.
You know,
yeah, he, yeah, he's good.
He's doing a good job. I'm excited for this. The animation style, so it's an animated show, it's not live action. Animation style is very, very reminiscent of Invincible.
Okay.
And it feels like the action will be hard hitting, in that style, if not as, you know, over the top.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's see if I can find a time or a date in this.
It's kind of, like a more fine line, like Batman Beyond almost.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And this is coming out soon. It's coming out October 14th.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Cool.
Excited.
Sweet. Yeah. Ben, we already talked about yours with the Randy Pitchford stuff.
Yeah. Fuck that guy.
Yeah. Unnecessary. So I'm going to give a choice. Do you want a depressing current eventsy story? Or do you want like a thing was announced and is happening?
I want three more favorite quotes from this.
Yeah. We could go.
I gave y'all mine. I can read the one about the mask of capital slipping for just a second to do the deed. all right. We were kind of all over the place there on the response.
I voted for happy. There's too happy. Much depressing happy. Stuff in the past week.
Yeah.
Reasonable. The bad one was just Gamergate 2.0 was doing their thing with the Charlie Kirk stuff.
Because of course.
Yep. And it's only gonna get worse. What's not gonna get worse is my favorite game in the Danganronpa series has a remake that is being announced. Danganronpa 2, Goodbye Despair. At the most recent like Nintendo Direct, like indie third party showcase or whatever, Spike Chunsoft announced Danganronpa 2x2, which is like an updated remaster remake of the base story, you know, the super weird the super weird story of Danganronpa 2 with an additional kind of like what if story as like a new chapter for people to play some new content. So it is not just you already knowing who did everything going in, although I defy anybody to remember all of the swerves of every individual case.
Mm-hmm. I just remember, wasn't it like a board game, the last iteration of Danganronpa, or?
One of them that Jala talked about had kind of a board game thing, the Summer Vacation one.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. That was like a Gaiden game, though. That was like a secondary, yeah. That was,
yeah.
Yeah, not man, not mainline.
So there's been a shooter genre entry in the series as well. With the yes. Ultimate Despair Girls. I'm trying to think of other genres that it has crossed.
That might be it. Yeah. There might be a more dating game heavy version, although that might be the board game as well because of the summer vacation kind of angle.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm excited about it. I don't know what the date is, but I don't know.
2026. If I was going to
2020, okay, just vaguely 2026. That's fine. I'm not in a hurry. If I was going to replay any of them at this point, it probably would be the second one. Mm-hmm.
I feel like video games are more suited than any other medium to having cool twists and changes in their remakes. So
yes,
lots of reason to be excited.
Yeah. Cool. There's a bunch of stuff at that direct event. This is the one that stuck out to me. I was like, hey, that's pretty cool. Cool. Does anybody have any opposition to buttoning it up?
I feel like I have abdicated my ability to say because I was not here for the start. So I cannot comment on how it finishes.
Okay.
Ooh. That's a weird wrinkle.
Yeah. Yeah, let's button it.
The credit.
If nobody's gonna step in.
Speaking of new twists.
I know, right? Yeah. If nobody was going to step in, it happened last time too. People
just seeing how wins. Long it would last.
Yeah. I don't know. thank you so much for listening to level number 558. The level has been moved over to the Patreon. Still going to be free. You can get it from your Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to it now. It should be seamless, hopefully. That just, we're just not hosting it externally. It just, everything is going to be available in one place. All the episodes are over. I've made sure they work right. All several hundreds of them should be good. We should be okay. So thank you everybody for your patience with that migration as it goes. While you're there, if you want to support us, go ahead. But otherwise, you know, everything is normal. Comment on the episodes, either on Patreon or on like Spotify has episode comments and stuff too. Ooh. That does help us out. Is there anything I'm forgetting besides ratings, reviews, telling your friends, all of that?
If anyone from my rambling knows what the hell was going wrong, let me know. Prevent it from happening again.
All right. Well, I've been Kay. You can find me on Blue Sky at K.Zone.
I've been Dennis. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I'm Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. I have two. One is a vibe segue.
Yeah, as one do.
And I don't like that one nearly as much as the second one, which is the holes unit.
Well, that's pretty good.
Okay.
I like that one a lot.
Moxie, do you have any?
I did not.
Okay. Ben, you got any?
I got a couple. I got All My Homies Hate the Beast Fly. And I got Codify, because I don't care if you don't laugh at it. I'm going to put it in anyway.
I acknowledged it. It just didn't make me laugh.
Then I see you. I too wrote down Codified.
Okay.
To be clear, I don't want that as the title, but I am suggesting it.
No, the holes unit is way better.
Yeah. Okay. What else did you have, Dennis?
Just the one.
Okay. The holes unit, I think, takes it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. All right.
It's been a while since we had like an overtly could be considered to be horny one. So
right. I didn't even take it there.
I did Yo, when filthy. Somebody else told me.
All right. It is decided.